Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, October 25th. Today marks 2 weeks until Election Day, and we talked to Sandra Fish from the Sun's politics team on how voters can cast ballots, as well as some of the big money going into the final stretch of midterm campaigns. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Forvis. Forvis is an accounting and advisory services firm that offers comprehensive assurance, tax, and advisory services to various industries. Created by the merger of equals of BKD and DHG, Forvis now ranks among the nation's top 10 professional services firms. To learn more about how Forvis can help your organization manage change, stay compliant, and bolster your bottom line, visit their website at forvis.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. By the 1880s, American Indian autonomy had faded in the United States, broken by conquest and loss of territory. The U.S. Army no longer needed as many forts for internal strife. It consolidated scattered posts into large new ones near urban centers with rail links to move soldiers wherever they might need to go. To that end, Company A of the 18th U.S. Infantry set up camp at a new fort site 8 miles southwest of Denver on this date in 1887. Lieutenant General Philip Sheridan selected the site, and while the post was referred to as Fort Sheridan by locals, that name didn't stick. Other proposed monikers included Fort McClellan, after Union General George McClellan, and Fort Denver. 2 years later, it earned its official name, Fort Logan, in honor of General John Logan, who had advocated for a holiday to honor soldiers killed during the Civil War. Logan County, in northeastern Colorado, also bears the officer's name. Troops from the fort headed to South Dakota after the Wounded Knee Massacre in 1890 and kept the peace during strikes and Denver's City Hall War in 1894. The demand for troops dropped by the century's end, and in 1909 the fort became a recruitment depot for citizens interested in joining the military. The post remained in operation during World War I and World War II as a training center with a population of over 5,000 during the latter conflict, but by that time Fort Logan had served its purpose as an active installation. Fort Logan operated as a veterans hospital after World War II and as a national cemetery. Later that decade, Governor McNichols turned the fort into a state mental health hospital. Before we continue, want to keep up with the Colorado Sun's events? Good news, you can get an email right to your inbox each month with an overview of all upcoming events. Visit coloradosun.com/events and click on the yellow button that says Sign Up to opt in. Again, that's coloradosun.com/events. Now our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. We are visiting with Sandra Fish from the Sun's politics team. Hey, Sandra, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for inviting me, Carol.
You bet. And today marks 2 weeks from Election Day. Can you start catching us up on some of what's going on? Voting centers opened yesterday.
There's so much going on, Carol. Yeah, voting centers opened yesterday, so you could go vote in person or drop your ballot off with real people at a variety of places around the state. And your county clerk will have information on where those locations are. And you should have gotten your mail ballot probably in the last week. If you haven't, you might want to contact your county clerk. We have a lot of information about this on our voter guide at coloradosun.com. But this is where, you know, the campaigns are really out there doing a variety of stuff, trying to get their workers fired up, trying to get voters to vote for them, cast their ballots. There's a lot going on. There have been quite a few debates among candidates, and there are several this week. You can find that on our voter guide also. So we have a ton of information there about candidates in different races, about the debates. We have some stuff on campaign finance, which is sort of my big deal. And there's just a ton of things happening if you're watching TV, especially.
Absolutely. And to your point, you know, my ballot came at least a week ago. It's a beefy one. I'm in Denver and there's a lot on the ballot. I'm sure that is the same for folks all over the state.
It really is. And, you know, one of the things that I find interesting, and I haven't pursued this with the post office or not, but, you know, the post Postal Service is really shorthanded, and we only got our mail 3 out of 6 days last week. And our ballot was mailed out on Monday, and I think we got it on Friday, along with a ton of other mail. So most people do, in fact, drop their ballot off at a drop box that's secure and has a 24-hour video camera in case you try to mess around with it. And most people do drop their ballots off at a vote center or in a drop box. And that's what I would really consider. You know, they say, you know, you can mail it in as soon as the 31st. But I think if you really want it to count, you know, the other thing that's really great to do, there's something called ballot tracks. And we have a link to that in our voter Q&A. And you can sign up for that and know when your ballot's been received and when it's been accepted for counting. So that's a super handy thing.
It is. And to your point, I get texts about my, you know, that my ballot has been mailed and that to receive. And then when I send it back in, I'll get a text when it arrives. And, you know, my local neighborhood post office sometimes has a handwritten sign on the door that says, you know, we'll be back, because there's one clerk in there and she has to go put mail in the PO boxes or do something, some other task. And she's on her own a lot of the time. And so that's a real issue right now.
Yeah, I've seen our mail delivery woman here at 9 o'clock at night in the past couple of weeks. And I know from friends who work there, they're working a ton of hours. So that's, you know, be patient with that part of it. But it's great to go. You can go drop these in at a voting center or at a drop box. It's super convenient. And I know you're getting other texts probably too, because I am from candidates and everybody.
Yes, I absolutely am. And, you know, when our readers get those, or if they have questions about the issues, I want to second what you mentioned, the Colorado Sun Voter Guide. You just go to coloradosun.com, hit the politics dropdown, and the voter guide is the first item that comes up, and it is packed full of information. I refer to it myself, and so it's a great tool.
And we like to see a lot of these messages that you're getting, and somebody sent me a message last night that we have a story about today. That's pretty disturbing, in fact, and it's a Spanish language mailer. I'd noticed late last week that a national organization called America First Legal Foundation was airing ads on Spanish-speaking radio stations, but they've also sent out mailers to Hispanic voters. And these mailers are pretty disturbing. They don't say vote for or vote against anyone, but they say that President Joe Biden and his leftist allies want to change your child's gender, basically. So they're filled with anti-trans sort of language. And it's a little bit part of a bigger trend, because we've seen other groups do this sort of thing too a little bit, but this is the most blatant thing we've seen. And, you know, I talked to Democratic Party Chairwoman Morgan Carroll about this. She really feels like it's an effort to even, you know, make Latino voters so discouraged that they don't want to vote. And it's just, it's really traumatizing disinformation, the things that they're saying on this Spanish language mailer. It's pretty disturbing. You know, it's coming from a nonprofit that is run by Stephen Miller, who is one of Donald Trump's top advisors on immigration.
Sure. We all remember Stephen Miller.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really interesting. And I'm sure that in these next 2 weeks between now and official election day on November 8th, that there's a lot of other money getting pumped into not just things like you just described, but also super PACs pumping money into races. Yes. In these last 2 weeks. What do you hear there?
You know, we're going to have, if you subscribed, if you're a premium Sun member and you subscribe to the unaffiliated newsletter that comes out tomorrow morning, we'll have this information in there. And then we'll have it later in the week in a story too. But, you know, the spending on state Senate contests is reaching for $3.5-4 million in several of those races by outside groups. And that's just quite a lot. And we're going to see more. You're seeing these commercials out there. There's Michael Bloomberg, the former New York City mayor, is pumping money into every town for gun safety, a super PAC that advocates for gun control issues. And they are spending $1 million opposing Republican Tom Kim in Senate District 27 in the Arapahoe County suburbs in Southeast Denver. And he's running against State Representative Tom Sullivan, who got involved in politics after his son died at the Aurora Theater shooting. And I went to see a rally in Aurora with Tom Sullivan and Moms Demand Action leader Shannon Watts and Senator Bennett and a lot of other Democrats. And, you know, these people really want to protect Tom Sullivan because he is on their side and he's been a great advocate. But you're going to see, you know, there are a lot of attacks out there on him. It's just kind of getting nasty out there.
Yes, this is definitely the time of the races when the gloves come off. And to have a Bloomberg super PAC putting that kind of money into one of our local races says a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot of people putting a lot of money into it, and we'll have more on that later this week. So.
Well, and to that point, I know that you and the politics team, Jesse Paul and Elliot Wensler, and just a lot of the reporters on the Colorado Sun team will be keeping us informed in the next 2 weeks. And after, when we get to the results,
yes,
we're going to have an event, a post-election event, where Jesse and you, I'm sure, will break down some of, you know, what you saw happen during this election season.
It's been interesting so far, and it's only going to get more interesting, Carol.
Yes. Well, thank you for dropping by to just keep us informed at the outset of this last 2 week stretch. And thanks to everyone who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners, Pirate Audio. And if anyone has thoughts or questions about the Daily Sunup podcast, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And have a wonderful day out there. I sincerely hope you can join us for the next episode of the Daily Sunup.
Read more on this story at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Each time a safe outdoor space site opens in Denver, neighbors worry that people who are homeless and camping there will cause disruptions that lead to more crimes in the area. But a Colorado Sun analysis of Denver Police Department data found that crime reports decreased in the neighborhoods where safe outdoor space sites have operated. This comes even as crime rates increased across Denver, poking a hole in the idea that people who are homeless cause disruptions that lead to more crimes in the area. Colorado's Air Quality Control Commission will not speed up plans to attack ozone and greenhouse gas pollution. The decision comes despite another report that the state is falling behind on its own mandates. Environmental groups and local officials want the governor-appointed commission to pass new regulations to get Colorado back on track. But after updates last week from state agencies, the commission did not reconvene a strategy subcommittee that would recommend faster-acting policies. The EPA's 2021 assessment found major industrial polluters in Colorado produced 42 million tons of greenhouse gases last year, up 5% from 40 million tons in 2020. New job data shows Colorado is right in the middle for unemployment rates nationwide. After 13 months of declines, the state's unemployment rate increased a smidge in August and stayed put at 3.4% in September. Also of note from the report, the average hourly earnings grew to $34.17, up 29 cents from August, and up more than $2 from a year ago. And all industries in Colorado have recovered the jobs lost at the start of the pandemic, except for the mining industry. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.